Brian Burke of the NHL on Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada is with us for his weekly hit. Burkey, good morning. How are you?
Good, thanks. Good morning.
So before we get into the today stuff, let's go back, because Friday marks the 10th anniversary, January 31st, 2010, of two massive deals made or consummated ultimately on the same day. You, as general manager of the Maple Leafs, acquired Dion Phaneuf from Calgary and J.S. Giguère from Anaheim. I remember being in a pub. I want to say it was a Sunday. I could be wrong. Being in a pub, having brunch with some family, and it came across the ticker, Leafs get Phaneuf, and then not long after, Leafs get Giguère, and it was like a holy crap moment or two and a holy crap day. How did that all come together?
It was a Sunday because Daryl Sutter was the GM in Calgary, and he asked to do it on Sunday. He said he had to meet with his owners and explain the deal to them, and he wanted to do it on Sunday. And I said, Daryl, Saturday is Hockey Night in Canada. All seven players in that deal played on Saturday night, including Ollie, Keith Ollie, who played in Abbotsford that night in the American League. And Daryl said, I'll make the deal sight unseen. In other words, no matter who gets hurt, we'll make this deal on Sunday. So we played that night, and we watched because Matt Stajan was in that deal, Mick Hagman, Jamal Mayers, and I want to say Ian White. And all four of them played, got through healthy. Then Calgary played. Dion stayed healthy, and Schustrom stayed healthy. And then Keith Ollie stayed healthy in the late game in Abbotsford. So we did the deal on Sunday.
When you trade or do, like when a team trades a big name guy or they acquire someone, do all general managers have to go to ownership or the board to bring them in?
Well, basically, if you're talking about a big player, you're not asking permission from the owner, but you'd be foolish not to keep him or her informed, right? Like, I can't imagine calling up the Samuelis and saying, I didn't tip you off about this, but I just traded for this guy. It's not a good way to do business, so especially if you need budget approval. So, you know, Richard Petty was my boss here. He's a great boss. He would deal with ownership more than I would. I just tell him, you know, keep him in the loop. This is what we got going. But this was a deal where I had asked for Dion. I really loved Dion as a player. I thought he was a fabulous player, and I still really enjoyed having him here. And I had asked Daryl Sutter about Dion, and he said, no, I'm not moving him. And then like 4 days later, I was talking to Bob Murray from Anaheim, and he said, are you in on Phaneuf? And I said, well, Phaneuf's not in play. And he said, yeah, he is. Daryl just offered him for me. So I called Daryl back, and I was swearing at him, and I said, I thought you said he wasn't available. And he said, well, I was going to call you. Don't worry about it. He said, and then we started working on the deal.
And how did the Anaheim portion, J.S. Giguère for Toskala and Blake, how did that come to be? And obviously there would have been some concurrent conversations going on.
Yeah, that one was more, I was trying to shake up the team. You know, like I did not like the team I inherited here. And Ziggy knows this. Sometimes a GM really likes a team, and sometimes a GM can't stand a team. And it's not always whether they're in first place or not. I felt when I got here, we had too many Euros, too many big contracts, too many no move, no trades, and just a sense of entitlement. And I did not like the group I inherited, and just moving them out a piece at a time, it took longer than I thought it would take. So that deal there, I felt when I first got here, I asked Ron Wilson, do we need a goalie? He said, no, Toskala's good enough. And he had him in San Jose, and he really believed that. It wasn't just, obviously he was wrong. But that's why we got Giguère. I couldn't stand watching Dessa Toskala play anymore.
At what point were you happy with the team then? You know, what was the tipping point for you? We're like, yeah, this is a group that I can get behind. We might not be perfect, but these are the guys that I want to roll with.
Well, I'd say by the fourth year, when I got fired, that team went on in that short season. We really felt we had the fastest team in the NHL. And the toughest team in the NHL. So you go back and look, we had Grabowski, we had Kessel, we had really good foot speed. And whenever we got possession of the puck, the other opposing team's blue liners would give up the blue line right away. So, and then we could scare the hell out of you with the bottom six. So I really thought, and that team made the playoffs, obviously, but at the end of the season, I wasn't there. But we had a vision for almost like the Anaheim Cup team, but shifting from top six, bottom six to more top eight, bottom four. But we wanted to be really tough and really fast. I think we were trying to play the kind of hockey that teams play now with that kind of foot speed.
Would you be happy to inherit this Leafs team with all their cap issues and some of the flaws that they have, but top-end talent?
It's not my kind of team. I mean, and the game's changed. The answer would be yes, I guess. I really like a lot of the pieces that they've put together here. I think the roster construction is faulty, but they've got some really good pieces. You'd be crazy if you were a GM not to – someone offered you the GM job in the Leafs, you'd be crazy not to think hard about it with the pieces you'd inherit. You know, you usually inherit a leaky ship, right?
Yeah.
You usually get a crappy team. And if someone got a chance to take this one over, that would be special.
It's an interesting conversation because in the cap era, if you're going to be signing a number of big names that are going to demand big money, you're always going to be in a pinch against the cap. The numbers are always going to be difficult. But I guess it's more of an eggs in one basket conversation, whether you'd prefer that or a number of middling guys who are just below tier one types of players to make up your roster, right? Because can you win with that versus can you win with the way the Leafs are trying to do it for the first time?
Well, I think there's a basic flaw here that they overpaid the top guys. It's not, I mean, Boston has four top players and none of them make anything like the top guys here make. So it's a case of misallocation of resources. It's not, you have to choose now between not having a backup goalie you can trust or having a defense that's not good. If you have to, because you've committed the cap dollars to four forward positions. And this is, again, it's very easy in the media to say, oh, they did this wrong and they did this wrong. I called this all out in real time and said before they signed Nylander, it's critical to make a good deal on him or they're going to overpay the other two, and that's what happened. And so they've got $40 million tied up in four guys. It's not sensible.
Is this, because it is right now, Brian, a strictly Leafs problem, or do you believe that this is a trend that is beginning, that guys coming out of entry level, if a team has drafted and developed well and has three or four guys coming up at about the same time for that second contract, that this is a trend that could begin?
Well, I think you've got to look at some teams. So the way it's worked in some markets, some teams, the players have said, I want to stay here. I can force myself to get by on $8 million. I don't need 11. Somehow I'll struggle by and get and manage on eight. And they stay. And that money, because these teams are all spending the cap, that money isn't saved by the owner. It doesn't go to the GM as a bonus. It goes right back into player payroll. And it goes into a guy who's sitting across from you who makes your team better. So I think they've made that model very hard. It's very hard to fit the pieces together and have a championship team here in this salary cap when you're paying those four players that much. That's my view. Now, I don't think they'll be able to do much at the deadline because of the cap. They're capped out. And I think it's going to haunt them. I think it's going to continue to plague them next year and beyond.
With the way these second contracts are now blowing up in the league, do you see in the next maybe CBA them changing the rules or trying to give in maybe push the entry level to 4 or 5 years?
Yeah. Well, my answer to that, Ziggy, would be, I have floated that with a couple of players, and it doesn't seem to inspire much enthusiasm. The thing that is important to me is, again, people listening say, oh, he's a dinosaur. He likes to fight with players over money. I fought with my players over money. I think you have to fight over money. I think players have to know it's not easy to get the money from you. But, again, you're in a hard cap system. You're not saving that money. You're just spending it elsewhere. And I think teams that have managed to sign their star players at reasonable contract dollars and then build properly are teams that win championships, like Washington, like St. Louis. And St. Louis, I watched them again last night. I don't know. I haven't seen a team that can beat them this year. So I think it's more pay. Who gets paid, I guess, is what I'm answering your question, Ziggy, is who gets paid. I'd rather Mark Giordano get paid than Kachuk gets paid coming out as a 21-year-old.
Brian Burke is our guest of the NHL on Sportsnet, Hockey Night in Canada, Leafs and Stars, 7 o'clock. The coverage begins tonight on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and it is a Sportsnet doubleheader, Wednesday Night Hockey, Flames at Oilers at 10 o'clock.
Jason Spezza makes his return back to Dallas after played 5 years there. How important are these older players to these young teams, and are they necessary? Like, we saw the Patrick Marleau the last couple seasons with the Leafs. Do you believe that's important for teams to create a winning culture?
Yeah, I do. I think that it's, I don't think it's not necessarily age as much as maturity and leadership skills. Like Trevor Linden, even as an 18-year-old, was a leader in our room. He had that it factor, you know, that people listen when I talk, people follow me when I walk. He had it. So I'm not sure you need much older guys, but you need veteran presence in the room. You need, you know, we had Sean O'Donnell on our cup team, Brad May. These are guys that never get mentioned when they talk about what a good team that was, but they were really important players for our team. And I don't know Jason Spezza other than say hello to him, but I hear nothing but good things about him. So yeah, I think that steady veteran component is important. I don't think it has to be a 35-year-old, though.
Do you think that John Tavares is a guy that people are drawn to follow? Because yeah, we know his work ethic is fantastic, but again, and I'm not saying this to disparage him and I'm not making any assumptions, but you can't just put a C on someone and expect them to be someone that people are drawn to. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but I think he was established himself as a good captain on the island long before he got here. I thought they should have made him captain the day they signed him. I don't see their current struggles, although I thought they really played well against Nashville. I don't like Nashville much right now, but I thought the Leafs played well. But before that, they were a little shaky, and I don't blame that on him because even when JT's not scoring, he's a workaholic in all three zones, and he just—I never see him take a night off. I see him have poor nights where he can't do much with the puck, but never a night off. Never is a lack of effort.
With Brian Burke of the NHL on Sportsnet, Hockey Night in Canada, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Tyson Barrie, Berkey, and this is probably the umpteenth time we've brought his name up. It has been a struggle, I would say, to say the least. We debated the other day whether, in hindsight, would you revisit the Kadri for Barrie trade? I want to look ahead. I take at face value what you said a little bit earlier on in the conversation about the cap constriction making any potential trade or move difficult at the deadline. Is Barrie a guy that they, I don't want to say would be shopping overtly, but would be looking to move if the right opportunity came up here in the next few weeks?
You're going to have to wait a couple weeks. I mean, no one's going to make the pull a pin decision yet when right now they're 2 points out of the second wild card spot and two points out of third. There's no way the Leafs are going to decide they're sellers at this point. Now, Barrie in a hockey deal where they move that much money and take that much back?
That's possible. What I meant.
I could see that. Yeah, I could see that. I bet you they're listening on that.
Yeah, I don't think they're pulling the pin at all here. I don't think they can. I'm thinking, is there a way, and it would take some creativity because of the cap issues that we all know about, is there a way to actually improve your hockey team that involves moving Barrie, understanding some of the other challenges on the right side of the defense that we've all discussed?
Yeah, I think that I think Barrie's still a desirable guy. He's a good guy. He's got good feet. It hasn't worked out in Toronto. I like the deal. In other words, I like the two players that Kyle got back. In terms of value, I think he got value, but I just think what they miss, what Kadri brings to a team is what this team needs. So I think he got value in the deal, but the component that he moved out is something that they lack desperately.